Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. So glad you could attend.
We finally got it to work for like 10 seconds.
Hold on. Yeah. Darn it. For like a second. We seem to still be having technical difficulties.
Hold on. What can you do? All right. Well, anyway, welcome back to the show, everybody. Seth and Sean, Sports Radio, sportspage.com, Blog Talk Radio. A lot to talk about this weekend. I mean, I guess the biggest thing that's been going on this weekend was combat sports, but we don't really talk about that. So I'll probably leave that to my last 2 minutes. How are you feeling, my friend?
It's been a rough go. This week, every year, it seems like I come down with something, and it's been a sore throat, ear infection, and just general stuffiness. But you know what? The show must go on, and Pete Rose must be shut out again for 30-some-odd years, and it doesn't look like he has any hopes of getting into the Hall of Fame and definitely not reinstated into Major League Baseball. Damning information and a damning letter from Senator Rob Manfred. Not to say that it wasn't warranted, but if anybody thought that Pete Rose had any hopes of getting in while he was still alive, I think today ended those.
It does seem relatively definitive. You know, there is no, you know, with Selig, there was always, well, maybe this, maybe that. This seems to legitimately shut the door on Pete Rose coming back into Major League Baseball. You know, the continuing to bet on baseball, continuing to gamble in general. This is now the fourth commissioner. Giamatti, Tay Vincent, Bud Selig, now Rob Manfred. And, you know, they have all said that he will not be allowed back in baseball. Now, specifically, Manfred tried to clarify that this doesn't really affect his eligibility for the Hall of Fame, but the reality is you're never going to have one without the other.
Right. Absolutely true. So, I mean, Manfred said, you know what, we just don't want him back in the game. And whatever may go beyond that, that's not my purview. He basically said it's not my purview. But at the same time, as you just said, Seth, there's no way it's one without the other. The Hall of Fame made a rule in 1998 that said that if you are on the ineligible list, you are not eligible for the Hall of Fame. And until that rule goes away, which there's no real reason to think that it will, this is going to be a dead issue. And I think it will actually be a dead issue until Pete Rose dies. And then we'll have this whole thing all over again.
Either way, this has been something that's been in the air for many years. We've talked about it countless times on the show. And at least, you know, as they said one time, I think it was on Family Guy, where they asked whether it was a good ending or a bad ending. It's neither. It's an ending. And that's what it is. The story is tragic to a degree, but after 30 years, we're tired of it. And, you know, I guess a little bit less than 30 years. And it's not going to change. And there's no reason to see anything to the contrary.
Seth, there was some new information that came out, at least in the letter, that I did not know. I'm not sure if you did. That, okay, so Pete Rose has continually said that he has changed his ways. He's continually said that he did not bet on baseball as a player. Did or didn't bet on baseball as a player, I think today is irrelevant to this conversation. Because what's past is past. And I think the commissioner and most pundits, including myself, I include myself in the pundit category.
I was going to say, are you now considered a pundit?
I'm a pundit. You're a pundit. We're all pundits. So the pundits out there, the people that actually care whether Pete Rose goes into the Hall of Fame or not, and I'm not sure you're in that category, but I certainly am.
I am not.
really don't care whether he bet on baseball in the past. I think that ship has already sailed. I think the fact is we believe he did. There's damning evidence that says that he did. So we assume he did. It's what he's done since. And what Manfred says, Manfred, in his letter, is that that Pete Rose, wow, talk about Freudian slip. Pete Rose has continued to bet on sports and bet on baseball. That's the thing that gets me. How on God's green earth have you said that you've changed your ways when you continue to do exactly what you were suspended for doing? And
yeah,
why?
There's no good answer for you on it.
Right. Why would anybody think that you'd be able to not do that if they let you back in the sport, which you continually say that you haven't bet on, yet all the evidence to the contrary says that you can? Somebody wants to find insanity for me, and I'm sure everybody's heard this, but insanity is trying to do the same thing time and time again, getting the same result, and not learning from it. Well, guess what? Pete, we've listened to you time and time again. And I have to believe that Rob Manfred and all of his cronies, and I call them cronies because I think of the Owners Club as a group of old men that just go in the back of the winter meetings and have cigars and very expensive scotch. All the cronies basically are saying, this is insane. We do this every 3 to 4 years, think about this guy, and every single time it's the same shtick. Wow, I think I've used like 5 Yiddish terms in one.
You've been all over the place. Now, the big question I think for you is, if they're not drinking scotch, are they drinking cider?
Are they drinking what?
They're not drinking scotch, are they drinking cider?
Oh, it's possible. It's possible. But look, I was of the belief that Pete Rose belonged in the Hall of Fame. If you take into account the fact, if you're not eligible for the Hall of Fame because you're not eligible for baseball, then this man should never be in the Hall of Fame, ever, because he should never be allowed. He should never be allowed around a baseball game again, other than in his, like, I don't know, broadcasting capacity where he doesn't affect young people. But it's insane that we keep doing this every 3 to 4 years, and because of that, I'm going to stop right now.
Your soliloquy was so eloquent, I didn't really want to stop you, and I know how passionate, you're much more passionate about this project or about this cause than I have been over the years. This is the end of the line with Pete Rose. And it's the end of the discussion, and he goes back and sells his hats, sells all his memorabilia and sells his autograph at Mandalay Bay. And, and this is what he is. And, he's never going to be seen out. He'll be always seen as a great hitter, but he'll always be seen as a much better baseball player than a human being. And certainly not the first person where this has been exemplified. But in this generation of all social media and where it's so in front of you, it's certainly been the loudest. And, hopefully this is not a discussion we'll have again or any time in the near future. But I guess staying in the baseball for a little while, we were talking about, players still in free agency. There's two big signings. Both of them kind of threw me a little bit. Jason Hayward getting $8 billion to go to the Cubs. I think it was 8 years, $184 million. To go to the Cubs. And this morning, or this, I guess you'd say about an hour ago, Johnny Cueto signing a 6-year, $130 million contract to join the San Francisco Giants. I don't know if you got a chance to see that. To me, Hayward, a nice player, a good player, better defensive than offensive player, nowhere near warranting. I mean, we knew he'd get $120, $130, $140. I didn't see $184 million. Again, it's over a year, so the average is probably not that different than $140 over 7. but I was surprised by that. Also, does this mean he's going to have to move to center field playing in Chicago? And a team like San Francisco, who has Madison Bumgarner, has Matt Cain back, has Jeff Samardzija, do they really need to spend $20 million a year? I know it's a two-year out clause. Do they really need to sign another pitcher? Or is hitting the problem in San Fran?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are going on here. Let's talk Hayward first. So Hayward at $184 million. Let's understand that Jason Hayward is one of the youngest free agents ever to come into the free agency market. He's 26 years old. 26, and he's a free agent. So most players actually are still on the upswing around 26, so they're getting better. Most free agents come around the Johnny Cueto year, which is 30, and then they're have maybe 1 to 2 years left, and unless their name is Barry Bonds and they're taking a whole lot of drugs, they're generally on the downslope. So if you're looking at Hayward, you're looking at prime defensive player, no question. And granted, in center field, he's less valuable than he is in right, where they have Jorge Soler. Secondly, he's 26, so they hope that he'll improve. Third, he does have a very good on-base percentage. Is he worth $184 million? No. Look, no. No. Absolutely not. But could he be worth $184 million? Potentially, yes. And again, he's 26 years old, so he could potentially be getting better. The whole thing about Jason Hayward is all about potential. He's always been that way. He's never put together that year that everybody looks at. So him playing center field definitely diminishes that contract a little bit. Now, I think what the Cubs are looking to do right now is to take Jorge Soler and maybe make a trade and move him back to right field and then sign Dexter Fowler, who is one of their own free agents. That could happen too. We'll see. The other thing is, for the Cubs, is that their starting pitching is not young. Jake Arrieta, who won his first Cy Young Award this year, 30 years old. John Lackey, 36 years old. John Lester, 32 years old, and has pitched over 2,000, or will come close to pitching 2,000 innings already. So they don't have any pitching prospects in the minors. So signing Jason Hayward is an ode to we need to win this year or next year. Now, what makes the Hayward signing all that more interesting is the out clause. Cueto signing, interesting, is the out clause. And to answer your question about San Francisco, they realize every single year that they've won with pitching. They haven't won with hitting. They get a decent amount of hitting. Remember, their best hitter is Buster Posey. They still have him. And their second best hitter has always been Hunter Pence, and they still have him. They won with Michael Morse at first base. They won with Marcus Scutaro. I know I'm butchering his name. At second base, they have Brandon Crawford, who's better than both of them now at shortstop. Gregor Blanco is still in center field, but he can go get it. They won with Angel Pagan in center field. I mean, Angel Pagan was a castaway from the Mets, but the Mets needed hitting. Always won with pitching, and now they're trying to replicate that. It's not even duplicate. They've done it twice. Replicate it in the even year, because they seem to always win in even years. So this is a pretty good contract, depending on how much money they had to give Cueto up front. If they had to give him 22 up front for the first 2 years with that opt-out, I bet you they're hoping he takes that opt-out and they're out of the back end of the contract.
I'm looking up the contract right now. See what it is.
I did not see a breakdown of that contract. That was I could not find it. I had looked.
Okay, then I'm probably not going to find it on ESPN either. All I know is that Cueto has the out clause, but it does not say any breakdown on what. I don't know, and I understand that San Francisco has won with probably the weakest lineup and won the over the last, it was three times in 6 years. And the staff is not quite what it used to be. We don't know what we're getting from Matt Cain this year. Tim Hudson retires. Lincecum was not very good. Ryan Vogelsong is gone. And you didn't get Lester, you didn't get Price, and you didn't get Greinke. So I understand that why they made the run at him. And he was much more effective in Cincy than he was in Kansas City. But I do find it, you know, I look at this lineup, again, I guess I don't really know what to expect from Matt Cain. But, you know, you have Bumgarner, you have Cueto, you have Samardzija, you have Jake Peavy. It's an older staff, but it's a deep staff.
Well, remember, Matt Cain is no longer the number two starter on that team. Now he's the number five. So not knowing what you're
going to do. Well, he's the number five if he can work his way back up to being the number two.
Well,
you know, we don't know what we're going to get from him at this point.
But what I'm saying is you have Cueto as the number two. Baumgartner is the one. Samardzija is the three. I'm saying that's not a lot. If you get a decent amount of money, a decent amount of if you get a 500 pitcher out of Matt Cain, granted he's earning $25 million, but you get a 500 pitcher, that's what you basically get out of a fifth starter. And you're happy with that. If he goes 10-10 in 30 starts, you're happy with that as your fifth starter.
No, and it'll be an interesting team as always to watch. Come September again next year. So, who are the trying other than Cespedes? Cespedes is probably the biggest name left in the free agent market. You know, Jordan Zimmermann is gone. David Price is gone. Zach Greinke is gone. Cueto is gone. Samardzija is gone. Who's left? And do your boys? I mean, more importantly, do your boys have a chance to re-sign him?
Well, the three guys that are left are Yonis Cespedes, Alex Gordon, and Mike Lee. And Justin Upton. So there's four. I'm sorry, I forgot about Justin Upton. So there are four. So Alex Gordon, I think you're going to see either going to Kansas City, back to Kansas City, or you may see him go to St. Louis to replace Hayward. Because Gordon is just like Hayward. He is a very good defensive player. And he hits about 20 homers, 80 RBIs, but he's 5 years older. So you won't be seeing him getting the same type of contract. He may also go to the Angels because they were looking into getting an outfielder. I think you may see Justin Upton wind up with the Angels. They need an outfielder very badly. I don't see the Mets signing either one of those guys. Because I think the Mets, after giving up their first-round pick for Mike Kadire last year, I don't think they're willing to give up another first-round pick to sign a guy. So who does that leave? That leaves Cespedes. Is Cespedes your guy? I don't really know. I mean, I said this on the program a couple of weeks back before I left. It really depends on how much he's willing to take. Do I give him $20 million a year for 5 years? Yes. Done. Signed. Sealed. Delivered. Done. Do I give him $20 million a year for 7 years? No. He's 31 years old. He goes through lots of prone slumps. Do I give him an out clause? Yes. Because I want him out. But it really depends on...
Go ahead. With Kadire retiring, too early, taking just $12-13 million off their cap, which again not very fine to start off with. Can you just change your thought process though, in regards to that?
Seth, I couldn't hear one word you just said.
Okay. I'll try this again in English.
There we go.
Michael Kadire retires this week.
Yes.
Leaves $12 million on the table. My question is, wasn't $12 million?
So, Michael Kadire retired, and he gave the Mets an out into their contract. Now, what happens generally is when a player does that, he gets a little token goodbye gift, like a golden parachute. So do I believe it's $12 million? Probably not. They probably got closer to 10, maybe 9. So let's say they have $9 million. So a $3 million buyout, which is a great buyout. I'd like to retire and get a golden parachute of $3 million. But, okay, anyway, so they got $9 million to spend. That's 1 year of $9 million. Again, how much? It's not the first 2 years that you care about. It's the last. It really depends on the amount of years that Jonas Espedes wants. And if he wants 7 years, I don't see the Mets going for that. If he wants 6 years, I don't see the Mets going for that. 5 years, I think the Mets are involved. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot one other big free agent that's out there, and that's Chris Davis.
Chris Davis.
The first baseman from the Orioles, who obviously the Mets will not be looking at because they have the immovable Lucas Duda at first base. And while Davis has played some left field, they have Conforto there. So they won't be looking for that. I think Davis ultimately winds up back with the Orioles. Another place to watch for either Upton or Gordon is the Nationals, who have been looking to upgrade their outfield as well. You also have Denard Span out there and Dexter Fowler, both who are high on base percentage, low power guys. But the Mets have been looking to swap out Juan Lagares if they don't believe that his shoulder is healed sufficiently, and he's also a platoon guy. So maybe a guy there. But like I said, if the Mets are looking at Denard Span, they'd have to give up a first-round pick, and I'm not sure they're willing to do that for that guy.
No, nor am I. Jumping from baseball to college football, and we'll get to some of the Bulls in a little while. Derrick Henry wins the Heisman. It wouldn't have been my choice, but I don't really have an issue with it. I don't know if you saw the breakdown. He won by about 300 points over Christian McCaffrey,
yep,
over by about 700 over Deshaun Watson. The problem I have is not with Henry winning. Again, he wouldn't have been my choice, but I don't really have a huge argument with it. But how can people claim to know anything about college football when more than one quarter of the total votes were in prior to the conference championship games? Perhaps you didn't see that Christian McCaffrey had 464 yards against USC. Now, that may not have made a difference, but I would have to – to me, people who do that there's an irresponsibility. And it could come from just the number of voters is just too grandiose.
What is their irresponsible nature, that they voted before the conference games?
Yeah.
Okay, I can tell you one rationale, not to say that it's true, but not everybody gets to play in a conference game. So what some voters... Not rightfully or wrongfully, and I don't know the rules of the Heisman. Obviously, they give voting up until the time of a week before. So I don't know the rules. But if you look at Major League Baseball as just or look at the NFL, you have to vote before the playoffs start. That's the rule. You have to vote before the playoffs start, whether or not they have a game 163 because there is a tie or not. That game does not count at all. Your vote has to be in before that game. So some voters, and I'm not saying I would be one of them, I'm not really sure how I would do this, would say that is an extra game that one guy may have gotten that some other guy may not have gotten. And I'm trying to put everybody on the same plane here. So that's what I'm doing. It's a rationale. Whether it's right or wrong, that's up to you.
In certain capacities, I can see that. But when you look at this, and there was, for all intents and purposes, three favorites going in. Leonard Fournette, he ran for 1,700 yards, had fallen back. But the three main contenders, Deshaun Watson from Clemson, Christian McCaffrey from Stanford, Derrick Henry from Alabama, all three were playing in conference championships. All three playing against top 10, well, I shouldn't say Stanford didn't play USC, was not top 10. All three, though, playing against solid competition, and the last really opportunity to see them in at a level against teams of solid level, against a solid level. Now, if Fournette was the overwhelming favorite, then that would have been one thing. when you have all three players that, you know, most likely are going to be where your votes go, prized, and a little disappointed that so many voted so early in this round.
Okay, that I can take. Now, I don't know the status of any of those players. I believe they're all underclassmen, right? None of them are seniors?
I know Watson's a sophomore. McCaffrey's a sophomore. I don't know what Henry is. I'll look him up right now.
Okay. Because my thought would be then you make it a career award rather than a seasonal award, which I don't think is the right way to go, but I've seen it done before. Look, I think Ron Dane was a career award.
I was going to say, that is the ultimate example of the, of a career award.
Yeah.
So
anyway, but the fact of the matter is that was my other contention. But I really do believe that it wouldn't matter whether Fournette was one of the top players or not. It doesn't matter. If you're voting, you leave it to your own scruples. You leave it to your own rules. If one of your rules is, I'm voting based on the same amount of games for every single player, then you vote right after that game, whatever number that is. It doesn't matter what you're voting. One versus
but
one.
But you know that there are teams that play. Well, wait a minute. Okay, Henry's a junior. But
okay,
you also know that there are teams that play like an FCS team. Should that game count? You run for 300 yards, a throw for 400 yards against University of Richmond. I mean, Richmond's a decent FCS team. Should that play a part? Or play both?
Again,
any...
person, I don't know. What I am saying is that this is a rationale. I'm not saying it's the right rationale. I'm saying it is a rationale. You ask why voters would vote before the conference playoff games. That's a reason that I have come up with. I think it's a valid one. Because if you look at the number of carries or look at the number of yards that, let's say, Leonard Fournette had versus Derrick Henry, they would be less in all likelihood.
Anyway, so just kind of going through quickly, Henry, 378 first-place votes, 1,802 total points. McCaffrey, 290 first-place, 1,539 1,539 total points. Deshaun Watson, 148 first-place, 1,165 total points. What I think would have been really neat, though, and they were going to do it, you know, I don't know what the criteria would have been. I don't know if you knew this. Keenan Reynolds, though, the quarterback from Navy, was fifth. With 20 first place votes and 180 total points, and he, who I think broke the record for, I believe, for most touchdowns scored. And they're going to fly him up from the Army Navy game directly from the game to make the Heisman ceremony if they had gone five deep, which they used to do. Now it seems the last few years they've only taken the top three. I just think that would have been a pretty every once in a while there's an exception which kind of breaks the rule on that. I think that would be pretty awesome.
I don't think it's five deep versus three deep. I think it's how close they are. So I think
if there's
get more than, like, I think it's 40% or something along those lines, that's when they break it out to five. I don't think it's a standard rule of five versus three.
But the last few years it's only been three.
Right.
That's the only reason that I mentioned.
Yeah, I think it's because the three are so much above the other. There's a cutoff, and I think that's it. I'm looking at the highest.
All right, so I mean, we're not going to do a hardcore bowl pick because we're just not going to. Besides, I think it's more fun to look at the actual names of the bowls than to actually watch some of these. Because I want to ask you this, Sean. Is there a way that you could miss Forest Reserve Celebration Bowl?
Only for the ball game that's played in Boise.
Okay, well, we're not there yet. So this is on December 19th. I know my wife is going to be extraordinarily excited that bowl games are starting next week. Yeah, you can hear it in the background. These are the six bowls. And I'm not even going to tell you the names of the teams in it because they're pretty irrelevant. But how do you like this? This is the lineup the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl, the Gilded New Mexico Bowl, the Royal Purple Las Vegas Bowl, the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl, the Cure Bowl, I don't know what the hell that means, and the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. Now, call me crazy. Now, BYU-Utah is just a good rivalry, so that's actually a pretty fun game. When you're looking at Ohio, Appalachian State, San Jose State, Georgia State, Arkansas State, Louisiana Tech, I'm not exactly setting a DVR for any of these games. The only thing that would be worse is probably Maryland, Syracuse.
Well, I'll give you another one. Why is Nebraska at 5-7 still in the bowl game?
I haven't mentioned Nebraska yet, but we'll get up to that one soon enough. Here you go. We have the Miami Beach Bowl, Western Kentucky, South Florida. See, when we get to games that are actually relevant, we'll make a pick on them. But, I mean, most of these teams are so asinine. I'm not sure if asinine is one of the seven words I'm not allowed to say.
No,
but
you can say that.
Okay. The famous, not even the Idaho, here you go, your Boise, Idaho. The famous Idaho Potato Bowl, Akron versus Utah State on December 22nd. Are you going to be DVRing it?
No, but Utah will have a great crowd in Idaho.
Well, it's not Utah. It's Utah State.
Even better.
I'm not sure Utah State. There you go. The Marmot Boca Raton Bowl. So, wait a minute. Am I going to be in Boca for that? No, I will not be in Boca for this. What a shame. Because the game starts at 7 p.m., so most of the people in Boca will be in bed by this point anyway.
Along with your wife.
Along with my wife. She can stay up till about 9. But, and believe me, she's not going to stay up until 9 to watch Toledo versus Temple.
No, but
so,
you would.
Let's keep. Well, if she's asleep, I'll be watching some kind of sport. The San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl, Boise State versus Northern Illinois. The GoDaddy Bowl, Georgia Southern versus Bowling Green. Let's see if we get it. Here we go. The Popeye's
Dino's
Bahamas Bowl.
Gino's not going to be there.
What'd you say?
That's great, except Dino's not going to be there. Yabba dabba doo.
We'll get to Dino in a little while. We'll go through these drafts and we'll talk about both Maryland and Syracuse's new coaches. The Popeye's Bahamas Bowl. Well, I may not care about the teams, but I wouldn't mind going. But I guess December 24th is the day of the nice places to go watch games, because we have the Nassau Bahamas and then we have the Hawaii Bowl in Honolulu. Both of those sound pretty good.
I may be in the Bahamas on that day. What time is that game?
Middle Tennessee versus Western Michigan.
What time?
Noon?
Yeah, well, I'll be on the beach probably. But okay, go on.
Are you going to the Bahamas?
I'm working on it.
My wife may be joining you in the Bahamas. I guess
no,
that is better than seeing my parents in Boca.
No. Anyway, go on. I love you, Carly.
The St. Petersburg Bowl, Connecticut versus Marshall. The Hyundai, okay, here's the first real bowl that we've seen. The Hyundai Sun Bowl. Now, we don't really have the Hyundai in the good old days, but we had the Sun Bowl. There's the yelling in the background.
Wait a second. Is the St. Petersburg Bowl in St. Petersburg, Florida, or St. Petersburg, Russia?
It's actually in St. Petersburg, Florida. Although it would be much more interesting if it was in St. Petersburg, Florida. I knew where you were going with it, and I completely agree. So here's the first real bowl game that we've seen, the Sun Bowl. That one's pretty familiar, Miami-Washington State. And that's entertaining because I don't know who's coaching Miami, and Washington State has Mike Leach. So the coaches are more interesting than the actual game. Keep going here. The Zaxby's Heart of, I don't know what the hell that means. What's a Zaxby? And I can skip the Washington versus Southern Miss. And, of course, our personal favorite at Yankee Stadium, Indiana versus Duke. Now, if this was at MSG for a basketball game, I think we may find this interesting. You may desire to sit in 25-degree weather for this?
It won't be 25 degrees if it was like this weekend.
Yeah, well, this weekend was very nice. Actually, I was Mr. Azalea offered me media passes for Indiana Duke. I'm not sure what the hell I will do with them, but I may go. The Camping World Independence Bowl. Remember when it was just the Independence Bowl? Just a thought.
That's in Louisiana, right?
That's in Shreveport. Tulsa versus Virginia Tech. The Foster's Farms Bowl. The only reason I know this was because Maryland went there last year and lost by like 40 to Stanford. And speaking of mediocrity, here's your UCLA, who I think you had in your Final Four playoff, if I remember correctly, and Nebraska, who didn't even break 500 this year. But I'm sure that'll be a game heavily watched outside of the Lincoln and out of the side of the Lincoln, Nebraska area.
Seth, how are they in the bowl game? Don't you have to be a 500 team to be in a bowl game?
You used to be. However, now there are so many bowl games, they can't fill them. So, yeah, exactly. So we're getting, see, again, these names are more entertaining than the actual game. I mean, look, the games are often very entertaining. You know, they're often, you know, scores 55, 47, stuff along those lines. But, I mean, I'm just joking because of the whole ridiculousness of it. We're still not really hitting relevant bowls. We're about four or five away from one. We have the Military Bowl, which is Pittsburgh versus Navy. And to be fair, to watch Navy this year is, you know, would be a pleasure. Navy's, I think, 11-2. Their coach was rumored to be the coach at Maryland. You know, their quarterback was top five in the Heisman. They've won the Army-Navy game 15 straight years. Kind of interesting. The Quick Lane Bowl, because nobody knows what the hell that means. The Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl. Well, I guess if you're going to have Lockheed Martin is as good as any. Here's the first real game.
Who's in that game?
California versus Air Force.
Oh, at least Air Force is in it.
Yep, and if you want to see Jared Goff before he goes pro and becomes the pick of the Cleveland Browns and the umpteenth consecutive quarterback to fail there, here's your chance. Real game, though. North Carolina against Baylor. Both of these teams, top 10, North Carolina wins 11 in a row and loses in a very spirited ACC title game against Clemson with a chance to actually tie the game in the last 2 minutes if it wasn't for a bad call on an onside kick. Baylor was, I believe, was it your national championship team? I believe you had them in your playoff before all four of their quarterbacks. They went both Maryland, Syracuse, where they lost every quarterback and pretty much had to start wideouts. But a pretty good game. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to take Baylor.
I don't know if any of Baylor's quarterbacks are going to be healthy enough to play. If they're not, I think Carolina wins this game.
They've had another month to another one. They'll find one.
Yeah, well, there you go. Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Yeah, that seems wonderful. Nevada versus Colorado State. I think we can skip that. The AdvoCare V100 Texas Bowl. That's big-time shit right there. Yes, I just cursed for the first time in a year because I just can't help but laugh. But there is.
We're going to the ship.
LSU versus Texas Tech. Texas Tech has the worst defense, I believe, in major football. And all they're doing is playing Leonard Fournette. I can't wait to see the spread on this. Okay, continuing through, the Birmingham Bowl. Nice to see Auburn in the Birmingham Bowl. That seems like relatively well-fit. NC State versus Mississippi State in the Belk Bowl. I can't even take this seriously.
That's a great name. That's the Belk Tire Bowl.
Well, that's why it's in Charlotte, because I guess it's a NASCAR thing. So you have NC State in a Charlotte Bowl. You have, as I said, Auburn in a Birmingham, Alabama Bowl. You have Texas A&M versus Louisville in the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl.
In Memphis.
Oh, God. In Memphis, because we're walking in Memphis. And we hit the Holiday Bowl. That one we've heard of, ladies and gentlemen. And two teams that we're actually familiar with, USC versus Wisconsin. Wisconsin, which underachieved again this year. USC with Clay Helton hired as their full-time coach. And Steve Sarkisian suing, as we discussed last week, for $12 million. based on him being fired without cause. Can't be fired because you have a disability. He's yawning at the thought of it. Okay, now we're on to the actual legitimate bowls. December 31st, Houston, who is one of the top five, the biggest non-power conference team, playing Florida State. I wonder how motivated Florida State will be for this. I think Houston gives them a very good game.
I think Houston wins the game.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised. At 4 o'clock, I will be watching 8 hours of football on this, and I know how excited Carly is. I don't even have to look at her because I can see the look of death. Number four, Oklahoma. Number one, Clemson in the Orange Bowl. I think we'll wait on our picks on the college football semifinals probably 2 weeks before the week before the show. Then, of course, at 8 o'clock, Michigan State, Alabama. Okay, we're kind of at the – no, we still got to – see, I can't even take this seriously. Okay, the Outback Bowl has been there forever, Northwestern Tennessee. Buffalo Wing, Wild Wing, Citrus Bowl, Michigan, Florida, neither team is very good, but they'll draw incredibly well. But here we go. Now, if I told you before the year that Ohio State was playing Notre Dame, you'd find this a pretty intriguing game, true?
Oh, you're talking to me? Yeah.
Yeah, the monologue is almost done.
Okay.
I told you that they were playing in the Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl. What would be your response to that? The Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl. I have no words.
So I've been to the Fiesta Bowl. Syracuse was in it, and I was there. And it's a great game.
It's Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl.
Oh, it wasn't the Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl. In fact, it wasn't even sponsored, I believe. It was just the Fiesta Bowl.
What a novel concept.
Yeah. You know what, though? I understand why these – for two things. And I know, Seth, you've been saying, well, North Carolina State's playing in the Belk Bowl – and Auburn's playing in the Birmingham Bowl, and so on and so forth. The problem is when you have all these bowl games is that it's hard to draw anybody to go because they're not worth anything, especially now that you have a playoff system. And, Seth, you and I have battled back and forth over this, and we kind of agree that four teams is not enough. And part of the reason I think four teams is not enough is because what are you saying to the other 55 teams that are in bowl games? You just don't matter. And they don't. So you need sponsorship, which is why you have, I don't know what the heck the Fiesta Bowl is called anymore, the Battle Frog something.
No, we're going to stick with this, the Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl.
Can't we just call it the Urban
Meyer Bowl? Can't we just call it the what?
The Urban Meyer Bowl game, right?
Oh,
there you go. Urban Meyer. We'll call it the Urban Meyer game. So, actually, it would have been better if it was Florida versus Notre Dame because then they could have a battle for Urban Meyer's soul.
Funny how Ohio State's not involved in that.
Right, exactly.
To keep going, I'm only going to look for funny names at this point. The Tax Slayer Bowl. The Motel 6 Cactus Bowl. I mean, I don't have really much to say. So anyway, we're not going to pick too many of these. When we get to the week before the game, the big games, we'll pick a few. Jumping to the NFL, Carolina keeps rolling. Your Jets are still in a pretty good spot right now, with three games to go. Do you see them making the wild card?
Well, the problem is the Jets, let's say the Jets win out, okay? They win three games, one of which is at home against the Patriots, which is a hard game to win. But let's say they win out. Let's say Kansas City wins out, who has a great schedule, and Pittsburgh wins out, who also has a pretty good schedule. The Jets lose the wild card. They do. Any notion of the Jets losing a game and losing it within conference, which means either New England or a Buffalo, which is the final game, the Jets will lose the wild card for all intents and purposes. Because both the Chiefs and the Steelers get to play the Ravens with Jimmy Clausen at quarterback. We know how that works out, having played him in our fantasy finals last year. They also get to, well, Pittsburgh gets to play the Raiders. No, Kansas City plays the Raiders in the last game, which is actually something beneficial for Jets fans, because hopefully they'll lose that game. But even if they lose that game, the Jets still have to beat the Patriots. And that's highly unlikely. So will the Jets get the wild card? No. It's likely that the Jets finish 10-6 and watch either the Texans or the Colts get into the playoffs with an under 500 record and see likely the Giants getting into the playoffs with an under 500 record. Unbelievable.
Well, I appreciate you having that much faith in my team more than I have in them. I've already pretty much, you know, they are playing in about a half hour. I've kind of given up on them for the year.
Really?
Because I'm so frustrated.
Really?
They could, look, they may very well make the playoffs. But considering how they have lost every game, literally every game this year in the last 5 minutes, I think they've, in the seven losses they have, I think they've led in five or six of them with two or three minutes to go. It's very difficult to have a great deal of confidence in them. We'll go through some of the games quickly. The big news, I think, for the week, Andy Dalton out, A.J. McCarron in. It looks like he's not going to Andy Dalton on a really few stupid passes he's made this year. Has a shuttle pass intercepted by Stephen Truitt of the Steelers. And hurts his thumb. He should be out a few weeks, but no surgery is required. And I think the hope is, I don't think at this point there's going to be too much faith that they're going to get to a bye. So the hope is that he's healthy enough for the 3-6 game, which ironically could be, yet again, the Steelers.
Well, there's two things that went on yesterday. One, the Jets lost their best way to get into the playoffs, because if the Steelers had lost, Jets would have had the inside track. Number two, now I've become the biggest fan against A.J. McCarron, humanly possible. Because another way the Jets can make in the playoffs is if the Bengals lose all three games. Let's go everybody that plays the Bengals.
I'm going to
play against every team in fantasy that has Andy Dalton.
Hopefully we do next week, although I don't know who our team is. But I'm not really too confident on your Bengals losing three in a row, 49ers at the Broncos, and at home against the Ravens. So I don't see them losing all three. I have no idea what you just said. But I'll take your word that it's true.
You said it may come down to the Ravens. Go Jimmy Clausen. I think I've now become the biggest Jimmy Clausen fan. And they signed Ryan Mallett today, too. Two of our ex-quarterbacks on one team.
No. Cincinnati signed Ryan Mallett. Oh, no, you're right. They signed
Baltimore. No, the Ravens signed Mallett.
Okay,
Bengals looking for Jason Campbell to come out of retirement.
Or do you think Kenny Anderson may be available? Or maybe Boomer?
Or Christian Ponder.
Or Christian Ponder. Well, no, he's too busy having his wife cover his bills for a while right now. I don't think anyone's heard from Christian Ponder in the football realm in a long time. Okay, going through the games quickly yesterday. Philly beats Buffalo in the McCoy being in the return of LeSean McCoy, who was so thrilled that he did not interview. Is there any chance that Rex Ryan is done in Buffalo?
I'm sorry, what was that question? I heard LeSean McCoy somewhere in there.
I said, is there any chance? So LeSean McCoy was so thrilled that there was a lot of animosity, which already kind of brought up by the press between him and Chip Kelly, the no handshakes, the calls, all this, that, the other. My question is this. Is there a chance that Rex Ryan leaves after this year or is forced out after this year?
I can't see him being forced out because Terry Peluga is actually a very patient guy who's the new owner of the Bills. And the thing is, Ryan, even if he doesn't win, has certainly brought some excitement back to that team. So I don't see him getting fired. Will he leave? Well, I don't know. That's a whole different story. I'm not really sure. But I definitely don't think he gets fired. No question. No doubt.
Right.
But there's only been one surprise firing, so you never really know.
Cleveland beat San Francisco in the game to see who drafts in the game for draft status for the most part. Manziel throws for a couple touchdowns, for a touchdown and 270, banging his head against a tablet. That's really about all I got from that game. St. Louis beats Detroit. I think all four of these teams are going to have new coaches by the end of this year. I cannot imagine that Jeff Fisher keeps it. I think the only one with a chance to keep his job is Jim Campbell in Detroit. I cannot imagine St. Louis with all that talent and this inability to win. I mean, has anyone been a coach for a longer period of time with less positive results than Jeff Fisher?
Probably not, but remember, Fisher is there in part if they go back to Southern California because he's a USC grad. So you
but what
never
does that
really
have to do with the, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, the Rams are looking to leave.
I understand that. Do you think that him going back to the Rams is a better choice? Is him them going back to the California is going to just because he's a USC guy is going to bring in more, is going to bring in a better name to it, bring in more fans?
If they go to USC, if they go to California, he will stick around at least for one more year. If they stay in St. Louis, I think he's fired.
Okay. Saints beat the Bucs, knocked the Bucs out of having any chance to make a wild card. Nothing really to discuss. The Jets cruised against Tennessee. Again, you know, nice win for you guys, but not really too much to discuss. Jacksonville wins by 35 over Indy. How is it possible that Indy has fallen this far, this quick, with such a it's not that young of a team, I guess. But, I mean, you know, the Jaguars are a one game out of the division lead right now with three games to go. Props to Gus Bradley. Because nobody expects, again, it's been 3 years, there's an expectation of something. But you win by 35. They knock out Hasselbeck. You have Charlie Whitehurst, who looks like the second coming of Jesus, as their starting quarterback next week. It's not going to be pretty in Indy. Chiefs beat the Chargers 10-3. Chiefs win 7 in a row. Chargers are the worst team in the NFL. Why haven't we heard that Mike McCoy may be on the hot seat?
Oh, I think he's definitely on the hot seat. He's done. By the way, not only props to Gus Bradley, but props to Rashid Khan, the owner, for not running Gus Bradley out of town already. Because before this winning streak, Gus Bradley, I think, was 5-30 in Jacksonville.
Oh,
that's a lot of
money.
Oh, I'm serious. If you're Jerry Jones, you've already fired the guy, right? If you're half the owners in the NFL, you probably have fired this guy at 5-30 already. So, yeah, props to Shahid Khan. And props to Khalil Mack. My God, I posted this last night on Twitter because Kevin Burkhardt, who is one of the NFL announcers for, I think it's Fox, said that he had never seen Cam Newton do a Hulk Hogan and get the entire stadium riled up doing it. And I said, well, Khalil Mack did a Hulk Hogan on the Denver Broncos, and the right tackle was Iron Mike Sharp. Wow.
Look at those obscure 80s wrestling references. Loving it.
Burkhardt loved it. But the fact is, Khalil Mack was 5 sacks last night against Denver, and basically propelling themselves still into the race for a wild card. They're still in it. And they actually are still in the division race, too.
The Raiders?
They are. They would
Raiders
need them
6-7. It's not very likely.
Rest their games, and they need to win the rest of their games. It's possible.
All right. Redskins, rare road win, first road win of the season over the Bears as Robbie Gould, unfortunately, has picked up the yips in the last couple weeks. It says something when you're 1-5 in a road and you're leading a division. Panthers cruise over the listless Falcons, 38-0. They're 13-0. We'll talk about them more next week if they beat the Giants, which they should. Seahawks cruise. They're the hottest team in the NFL right now, 35-6 over the Ravens. I'm not sure the Ravens really, I mean, there's not really much to say. We discussed quickly the Raiders.
They did lose Rawls, so now they're left with Fred Jackson as their running back, who we may want to pick up, but as a side note. But anyway, they do not have running back depth right now at the most crucial time in the year to have a running back, and they need to win the wild card. They need to actually get in because Arizona has played such great football.
Packers 28, Cowboys 7. Again, not pretty, but Lacy runs for 24 with Buck 24 and a touchdown. New England comes back. Easy win over Houston, 27-6. And then tonight we have Giants-Dolphins. Got 3 minutes left. Anything you want to do a quick sum up?
Yeah, props to Ronda Rousey, who got off her tail to fulfill the promise to the Marine that she promised to take to the Marine ball. There was a lot of pressure on her over social media, but I do give her a lot of props actually getting up and fulfilling that promise when she certainly could have backed out.
All right, I'll talk the last 2 minutes about some MMA, because I know there's a couple of people who are going to yell at me that we don't talk about it on the show. And if there was a night to discuss it, it probably was Saturday night. Two new champions, Luke Rockhold in a great fight over Chris Weidman, and Conor McGregor, who's probably now the most charismatic athlete pretty much there is, a 13-second knockout over a long-term time champion, pound-for-pound champion, Jose Aldo, lightweight champion of the world, well, featherweight champion at 145. The question is, does he move up? Does he not? Dana White has a lot of decisions to make, and it should be very interesting. And even if you're not an MMA fan, to listen to him talk is truly entertaining. Kind of very similar to a Floyd Mayweather without all the vitriol. Awesome. But he has one legitimate fight left at 145 against Frankie Edgar. Hopefully he takes it and then goes up and challenges whoever the champion is after next week. So we have about a minute to go. Two shows before the end of the year. We want to do our end of year next week or in 2 weeks, because in 2 weeks I will be actually on a flight to Fubalo. Not a flight to Fubalo. What the hell am I thinking? A flight to Boca. 500 miles in the wrong direction. So Sean and I will talk about that. Props to myself and to my business partner, Mr. Hirschberg. After all these years, we have finally purchased the firm. Thanks to Sean for constantly letting me use the car. I may have to request it one more time. And overall, good year so far. Got engaged, got married, bought a firm. Most of the goals. So, and, you know, who the heck knows what else is out there. So that's about all I got. Sean, you got anything to finish up or we're good?
10 seconds to go. This has been Seth's soliloquy. See you next week for the year wrap-up. See you, everybody.
We each had soliloquies. You had Pete Rose. I had college football bowl names. More Sean Palmer. This is Seth Gamers. Have a good night, everybody.